like that, did you, Jenna? That caught you by surprise.
Really good.
Hey, that's what we do. Jenna Barr is sitting in for Candy today on the Pensacola Morning News. I'm Andrew McKay, and good to have you here on News Radio 92.3. Joining us by phone, we have Alex Andrade. Alex is our state representative for District 2, southern third or so of Escambia County and the beaches in Santa Rosa County. Alex, welcome back to the program, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew and Jenna. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. How's it going for you? We're deep into session. You got a week left. You're a new dad and, you know, the attorney for the city of Milton and other attorney duties. Are you eager that it's almost over, or do you wish it could be longer?
I'm very eager to wrap it up. This has been a very long week on because we're actively engaging in budget, you know, negotiations and bartering. And, it's just been a lot of late nights, a lot of early mornings. I'm you know, and it's a full week. You know, I haven't seen my wife or daughter in 5 days, so I'm definitely ready to be home soon.
Oh, man, that's the no fun part of the job for sure, among other things. Hey, I did want to ask you, just because we got the news yesterday, or maybe, I guess the day before now, that NAS Pensacola is going to be opening up for two more weekends, extended weekends, four-day weekends, Thursday through Sunday. No Blue Angels practice for these weekends. It seems to me, and this is in your district, but it seems to me like we are on the verge of, fingers crossed, 7 days access coming soon, just by doing it the old way with having a little bit of extra personnel and opening up the back gate. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, the way I see it, and I'm not a member of the Navy. I'm not a federal official. I think Senator Rick Scott, when he sent a letter along with I think Senator Rubio seconded that letter last year at some point, saying, "Hey, let's make these investments. We're committed to getting this back open." The Navy took a second look and maybe thought, hey, do we need these investments? Can we do some soft openings and kind of see the feasibility of just opening it back up and, you know, like go through the security process to make sure. So that's the feeling I get from what's going on. Not 100% sure, but yeah, I'm hopeful.
And obviously, if that happens, huge difference maker back for our community, for the connection between the base and the rest of us, and for tourism, and for just, I mean, all of it, the whole package. If we can get back, so I'm almost been like scared to believe it, you know, it's honestly because it's been so painful to be separated from the base for so long like this. Some of the things that you've been working on, we talked yesterday with Michelle Salzman. You are a co-sponsor on the bill, just as she is, about undoing that portion of the post-Parkland gun restrictions bill that would have the bill now would be to reduce the age to purchase or transfer guns back to 18 from 21. She says she thinks that's not going to survive because the Senate's not going to do it. Are you of that same assessment? Like, even though you want to do it, it's probably not going to happen this year?
Well, I mean, we're going to vote on it and send it over. The reason, you know, the only reason it might not happen is the Senate didn't have a companion bill that moved. So, Senate could do it. They'd have to waive some rules to do it. And I don't know if they're going to be willing to or not, just because if they had a companion bill to move, I mean, that's the evidence that I would know whether or not they, you know, supported the legislation. But since they haven't, you know, if we send it over in messages, which is once we pass off the floor, we send it over across the hall, you know, they can take it down if they want, but I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. Well, I kind of like your possible optimism. So we'll see what actually happens. That would be, you know, wonderful if it did, from my opinion. One of the things that you've been working on, I think you guys are going to vote on this today, is the changes to the election laws. Aside from the resign to run, which I guess, again, Michelle yesterday was telling me that she wanted to allow it for all statewide officers, representatives and senators in all federal offices instead of just for president and vice president. It looks like that's not going to be the end result of the package you vote on today. But do you favor keeping a resign to run law? I guess in my mind, I find it hard to justify since there aren't very many states who have it. It doesn't really make that much sense to me. What's your position on having it in the first place?
Resigning to run, it's not it, you know, if you're running for higher office, there's no question in my mind that you're not committing your, you know, necessarily committing your full time as a legislator, right? But as an executive, you're managing 1,000 different things, but you also have a ton of staff. There's only one executive in a state, and they have a ton of staff, thousands upon thousands of employees. In that context, I can I can understand why it's kind of weird that we don't let folks, you know, run for office in that way. I mean, but no, I mean, I'm actually just kind of ambivalent about it. There's just not much that I think for practical purposes this, you know, change would have a real effect on. You know, because I mean, you're going to have a vacancy somewhere. You know, if you have to resign, you know, then your position's gone. Lieutenant governor position is going to step up, and then lieutenant governor position is gone. You know, if you're saying that somebody can't do, you know, can't walk and chew gum at the same time, it's a distinction without a difference to me. So, you know, I have no problem supporting it just because I don't think there's a real practical effect.
Okay. And I think you've given us an idea for our next gubernatorial debate is instead of answering questions, they can show whether they can walk and chew gum at the same time across the stage, like in a 50-yard format. I think that would really help us a lot. Alex, obviously Disney and the conflict between Disney and the state, styled as Disney versus DeSantis, but certainly it's the entire state government, has been all in the news. I have said, look, this to me, I see it as political. I see it as retaliatory. I'm not saying it's unjustified to take away their special status. That makes sense to me. Nobody should have had it in the first place. But things like the monorail inspection just seems so petty, honestly, to me. It's, again, you can't argue against it, but it just seems like all of these things are showing the weakness of our hand rather than the strength of our hand. Now with the lawsuit that's been filed by Disney against the state and all of their complaints, and I know you've been, you know, pretty close to all of this stuff. What's your take, especially on this lawsuit's merits, possibly?
Andrew, when you sit down and think that every elevator, regardless of how small, is state inspected, and a monorail that carries thousands of people every hour at high speeds, high above the ground, is not, I was stunned when I first heard that. You know, so no, I don't think that the monorail inspections is, you know, the bridge too far. You know, it's, as some folks know, there was a lawsuit filed this week by Disney against the state. It's filed in the Northern District of Florida, with a judge who has made some high profile rulings, at the district level against the state. Just this week, the 14th Circuit Court of Appeals reviewed one of that judge's decisions on Senate Bill 90, an election law that we passed a couple of years ago. In his opinion, he called us as a legislature racist. I don't know how many different ways. The 14th Circuit Court of Appeals just overturned that ruling, said, you know, his decision calling us all racist and saying that bill, you know, was the wrong decision. So I just want to remind folks that a trial court decision, one way or the other, regardless of the judge, is not necessarily the end-all, be-all constitutionality. We have appellate courts for a reason. We have the Supreme Court for a reason. So while I'm, you know, confident in the state's position on this one, Disney was getting a ton of special treatment, you know, favored status. You know, we were picking winners and losing the marketplace. We decided to stop engaging in picking winners and losers in the marketplace in that context. I just want to remind folks that you're going to see a lot of, you know, headlines about trial court activity. Don't read too much into it. One way or the other, if it gets appealed, it gets appealed. And we have more judges making the same determinations, and their, you know, intelligent minds can differ. And thankfully, you know, this one trial court judge has been overturned several times by the 14th Circuit. And even if, you know, initially a ruling goes against the state on this one, I can tell you, you know, we don't, you know, we did not engage in anything I would deem unconstitutional in this context.
Yeah, and that's a great reminder, too, is that, you know, an individual trial court judge is one thing, But the panel on the appeals judges, or again, if it gets to a Supreme Court level, the idea is we trust in a larger number of justices to make a balanced decision. And don't get too excited one way or the other if something is likely to go to those other appellate review levels before you decide what's going to happen. Alex Andrade is our state representative for District 2. Alex, good luck getting home. and I know you got to still go back for another week next week, but we'll look forward to talking to you next Friday, sir. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, guys.